I hear the voice of my grandmother calling me. I hear the voice of my grandmother calling. Wake up, wake up. She says, wake up, wake up. Listen, listen. Listen, listen. May the rivers all run free. May the mountains be unspoiled. May the air be pure. May the trees grow up tall. May the earth be shared by all. I hear the voice of my grandmother calling me. I hear the voice of my grandmother calling. Wake up, wake up. She says, wake up, wake up. Listen, listen. Listen, listen. May the rivers all run free. May the mountains be unspoiled. May the air be pure. May the trees grow up tall. May the earth be shared by all. May the air be pure. May the trees grow up tall. May the earth be shared by all.
Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Sama Morningstar. And before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to share a few announcements with you about what's going on this winter of 2020-2021 in the Womb Centered Healing Temple. So as you may be aware, the Herbal Womb Wellness Workbook is soon to be published and available. It will be published on Lulu, and we will be I'll be making it available to those who purchase the workbook to join me for monthly circle calls in sort of a book club format. It'll be fairly ongoing. There are many options for getting involved with working with this wonderful workbook, some more in depth than others. There will be a 13-week more intensive course to go with the workbook. And of course, the workbook is included in the Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship Program. And all of these other courses and circle calls are included in that program as well. Speaking of the Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship Program, I'm also making it available sort of a la carte, if you will, because there are 8 phases in the Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship that go throughout the course of a 13-month program. But each phase is a standalone program of about a month to 6 weeks. There's one phase that's, I think, more like 7 or 8 weeks. And so keep an eye out on the website. The phases include pre-birthing, which is another term for ancestral healing, rebirthing, which is the phase that we're in now at the time of recording this, December 2020. The next one will be remothering, and the following one will be coming of age. And then there will be a creative fertility and a creative partnership phase. And then there's the enchantress phase and the wise one phase. So if you're interested in any of this, I encourage you to visit wombcenteredhealing.com, the Womb Centered Healing Temple website, and check out, look at all the different options in the menu, and reach out to me if you would like to join us for any of these offerings. All right, that's all for now. I encourage you to enjoy this episode, and until next time. Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Sama Morningstar, and I have Eden with me here again today for part 2. Some of you may have listened in for the part 1 of for Eden's first part of her interview. And we got so into Eden's story about her reproductive womb journey
of not having all the information she needed throughout her life as an adult, fertile woman, having babies and things like this, and how to understand her fertility and what was happening, and all of the detrimental effects of having misinformation, being lied to by the medical community from time to time about birth control, and just not having proper information about what's healthy for our menstrual cycles and like that. And this is such a common story. And I'm so glad that you're willing to come on here, Eden. And also that your experiences with this have inspired you to create a business where you can make healthier products available based on what you've learned about what's unhealthy for our reproductive health. And so you've created a business where you've gathered together this information about what's actually healthy for our menstrual and for fertility health. And so you can spread this information and make these products available for your community. I just celebrate your resilience and your creative, solution-focused movement. And I just want to make sure people can hear what you have to say about this. So I'm so glad you came back on to tell the rest of your story. We got so involved in your story that we ran out of time last time. So I'm so glad you came back for part two. So please, let's jump back into where we left off in part one. We were remembering that you were talking about your pregnancies, and you had told the story of your first pregnancy, and you're about to tell the story of your second pregnancy. So let's jump right back into the story there.
Okay, so hello again, and great to be here. We did stop at me going into the second pregnancy. I spoke about how the first pregnancy was very peaceful, and there was a lot of light moments. When it came to my second pregnancy, I was 20 years old, and it's just funny how cycles happen and how the world responds and reacts to things. But I was, my boyfriend had moved back into town, and we rekindled our relationship, and then I ended up pregnant again. I was very unsatisfied with the idea, and not just the idea, but actually being pregnant, because we were not in, I guess, a healthy relationship, and I did not want to be pregnant again by the same person because of the way our relationship was. It just wasn't ideal. And so I tried my best to kind of just accept it, and I tried to maneuver through it, but it wasn't easy. It was very uncomfortable. And not only was I uncomfortable mentally, but also spiritually, emotionally, and as well physically. I had terrible heartburn with this second pregnancy. And the heartburn was so terrible, I felt like I could chew gum and I would get heartburn. So I didn't eat much. Every time I had a checkup, it was all this, you know, you have to eat. And I'm like, it hurts for me to eat. And it wasn't a peaceful time. I had also, halfway into the pregnancy, discovered that the person that I had been pregnant by had had interest with someone else. It was like emotionally just draining. And I believe that's how I carry. And the reason I think that's so important with the way the pregnancies were is because I don't, like, not that I took it for granted. It was just, I didn't know. Being pregnant, it's more than just having a egg be fertilized by sperm and just going a period of 9 months. Like, your body is going through things. You also, not just going through things, but your body is carrying life. And it's not just carrying it, but it's creating it while it's carrying it. And you have to be in a place physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, to be able to, you know, endure that. And it's a privilege, but also it's a very difficult task. And with, I guess, with you have to understand the purpose of the womb in order to fulfill that task. And I believe I was ill-equipped to do any of that because just of the misinformation. Either you had family with it being taboo and not wanting to discuss it, or either you had professionals in the healthcare industry that just didn't care. And then you have me in the middle with, you know, this in this just this hole of just not knowing.
So remind us, Eden, about, you know, you told the story of your first pregnancy and how peaceful it was. It seems like you must have had a different idea about being pregnant with this same father then, and why it was so, I'm just curious why it was so peaceful then when all the circumstances were the same. You didn't have the information you needed still then. I mean, if you didn't have it in the second pregnancy, you certainly didn't have it in the first pregnancy.
Right.
How was it that it was so peaceful that first pregnancy and then so tumultuous in the second pregnancy?
The first pregnancy, I blamed everyone that I believe had a part in my growth and development. So I didn't blame myself. It was like, this is my parents' fault. This is my educator's fault. This is my healthcare professional's fault. This is my church's fault. This is his fault. But it wasn't on me. The second time, I blamed myself. So I believe that mentally I carried that. The first time I wasn't, it was kind of like I had accepted what had happened once I became aware of, okay, you're pregnant. It's like, okay, you don't want to be, but it's here. So let's figure it out. It's kind of like your first rodeo in something. It's like, okay, this may look like a hard task, but I can do it. When you're faced with the hard task again, and you believe to have made it through the first time, but it's like that second time you put yourself there, I had a different mindset. It was like, okay, I got over this the first time, and now I've put myself back in a situation that I blamed everyone else for. Mm-hmm. And supposedly, possibly should have gotten some knowledge from that first time, but here I am again. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was it was guilt maybe that was present with me the second time. Mm-hmm. Again, something not good circumstances for my womb, as I'm understanding now.
Right. You know, I can so understand that. I've had repeating patterns in my life too, and difficult patterns. And the first time, or even the first and second time, depending on the level of difficulty, it can be easy to repeat something. I mean, to blame something on other people and say, it's their fault, this happened to me, and I'll just deal with it. But then when it happens again, mm-hmm. the same pattern, it starts to dawn on a person that, okay, who's the common denominator here, right? Because the second time the circumstances were different, you were fully aware of the activities that could get you pregnant, right? You'd had the experience before, and you knew who you were dealing with this gentleman that you know that you were messing around with. And you knew that what the results of your behavior could be. And on top of it, you already had a child that you're raising, which is a tremendous amount, because you're talking about the amount of energy and resources that it takes to gestate and birth a child. And then that's just the beginning. There's all this energy and resources that it takes to nurture and raise a child as well. And right. So I can imagine you're already, you know, you weren't fully nourished and prepared the first time round. So you're already kind of running half on empty, right? On half a tank or close to empty with this first child, because you weren't taught how to take care of yourself, especially probably not postpartum. I'm wondering what kind of postpartum care, probably nothing. You just had to get up and do the work and get on with it, right? And right. So by the time you get pregnant again, under those circumstances, there's already a level of exhaustion because you never really recovered from the first one. And then there's this, like, what did I get myself into? So I can so relate to that. You know, for me, it's never been around having children, but I can imagine that it's just magnified when it's that much of a thing. You know, having kids is a big thing. That's why I chose not to. I made sure to find out because my mom went through what you went through.
Oh, wow.
And I witnessed that in my mom, not having the information she needed and not understanding her fertility and all the suffering that it caused in her life. And I didn't want that for myself. So I was able to see that, and out of my desire to not have that, I made sure I had the information I needed. Granted, it wasn't the best information, but I at least had information. So tell us then, here you are, you're feeling all this guilt, you're having this heartburn, you're uncomfortable, but you got through it. And tell us, what was next for you? How did you overcome those feelings? Where did it go for you from there?
I guess I can say, sadly, I have always been taught by, it's been environmental, but you just deal with it, get over it, go through it, you know, don't sulk, don't just wait, don't just cry, don't have a pity party. So I dealt with it. I picked myself up and I just went. It's funny that you asked that, because now, like, literally 2020 was when all these epiphanies came, and when there was like a realization, is like, it just hit hard, and all this information came and this wealth of knowledge, because I started to begin to understand that that wasn't the healthiest way to go about that. Probably the least healthiest way. You have to deal with things. You have to process things. Because unless you process it, you don't know what's going on unless you know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what's going on, you can't correct or improve what's going on. So it was just me getting past it, not understanding it. And so I just managed, mm-hmm. I guess. And then 3 years later, my then boyfriend became my husband, and that was a beautiful thing. And then there was some peace that came over me, because on a family dynamic, it was like, okay, now there's more understanding between he and I. We are on the same page. We are understanding the importance of family. We now know how to operate, you know, a family. We also know how, when we create life, you know, there shouldn't be, and that was the thing with my ectopic pregnancy that really hurt me the most. It was for twice, I've done this the way that my beliefs say I shouldn't have. And then here I am, I've gotten married and now I'm pregnant again. And I have all the opportunities to correct those wrongs, shall I say. And it was like supposed to be in my mind some type of redemption. And then boom, it's like, nope.
So as if I remember correctly, after your second pregnancy, they offered you birth control, or they just assumed you wanted to be on birth control after that, right?
Right.
The doctors did. And you accepted that because you were clear you probably didn't want to get pregnant again right away.
Right.
And then that's when you started to notice, well, this isn't right. I'm not having a period at all.
Well, and during that, again, it was the whole marriage dynamic. And that's the thing that if my mind was just so in a different place, I wouldn't have allowed it to take me where it took me. But that whole marriage dynamic had me to say, okay, well, I'm not married, so I shouldn't be having kids, even though I already have two. So I shouldn't continue this cycle. So let me just get on this birth control. And this birth control that they've offered me, I can have for 5 years. By that time, I should definitely be married. But just in case, you know, I have this birth control. And so all these things are just happening to my body that I'm unaware of. And I'm not having a cycle, but a 21-year-old that's the furthest thing from my mind that I'm not having a cycle, because that means, you know, ignorance is bliss, but that means I can't have a baby, you know? So kudos, you know, I'm this is good. This is gravy. This is perfect. And then now you have 35-year-old me that's like, what did you do? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah.
Why did you do this? You know, it's just, and it's just small things, and it's conversations, you know. And my husband and I, we say it all the time. If we knew then what we know now, and if we were in the right place, relationship wise, we would have had more children.
Mm-hmm.
Not putting, you know, labels on things, and, you know, just allowing life to just take its course and not, you know, stop it and have all these detours and roadblocks and stop signs and yields and things.
Mm. Well, the mystery of life takes us on the journey that we're on, right? And not the ideal journey usually. And in hindsight, we can see what the ideal journey might have been. But so it was both this, all the stress from your first two pregnancies, all those difficult, complex feelings you were having about not really wanting to be pregnant, the difficulties you had having to go it alone. And then, if I remember correctly, there was stress about your now husband, then boyfriend, being interested and involved with someone else for a period of time.
And right.
There was that stress too.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably contributed to the not having a cycle. I don't know if you were aware of that, but relationship stress can definitely contribute to not having a cycle. And right. And because the birth control that you were on doesn't necessarily produce that effect. They have it. For some people, it has different effects for different people. And so it's not just automatic that it stops you having a cycle. And so we can look at other things, contributing factors to you not having a cycle, all those feelings of just not wanting to have more children, but also the stress of your husband or your not yet husband having his journey with figuring out who he want to be with and how. And then all of that stress never really being addressed, because you had, just like I had and many people have, the modeling of you just grit your teeth and you stiffen mm-hmm. your upper lip and you put on your, you know, get it done hat and you go move forward. You don't spend time feeling your feelings, processing your feelings, recovering from these traumatizing events. There's not even any acknowledgement that these events are traumatizing at all. And I just did another interview with another podcast guest who focuses on helping people heal from childhood sexual abuse. And in that conversation, I was talking about how, you know, because she was sharing about the effects on adult people who experienced sexual abuse when they were children. And I was saying, well, you know, even if you didn't experience overt sexual abuse as a child, not being fully initiated and into an understanding of your healthy fertility and sexuality as a young adult produces the same effects.
Yep.
It's like sexual abuse for young adults because, you know, we being just sort of tossed into your adulthood without fully being informed and educated in about healthy sexuality and healthy fertility.
Because abuse is a word that people, they just use it on the high end.
Yeah.
But they don't think that abuse is just anytime you there has been a misuse of something.
Yes.
That's it. It doesn't have to be all this vigorous. It can just be misuse.
It can be neglect. It can be neglect. Right? So if you were neglecting your children, not giving them what they needed, you would be probably, if anybody found out about it, you could very easily be accused of child abuse, right?
Right.
From neglect. Uh-huh. Right. You weren't feeding your child, if you weren't getting them to school, if you weren't, you know, making sure, ensuring they had an education, all these things, you'd be accused. Well, here we are as a society neglecting our sexual development. In fact, suppressing our sexual development as young people. And with all of these belief systems that you shouldn't be feeling this way, it's sinful to feel this way. Hello, how did we all get here in the first place? You know, all these feelings, and without any kind of structure of educating and informing and helping to initiate young people into a healthy sexuality and fertility. And so that neglect, I feel, qualifies as abuse and requires a healing process. So I'm so glad that it sounds like, since all of that, and especially with this ectopic pregnancy where you thought, now I'm married, now I'm playing by all the rules, right? Now everything should happen smoothly, and boom, not so, right? You're like, yeah, okay.
Dude, I was talking to God. I was like, dude, I did this wrong. Like, according to you, I did this wrong. And you gave it to me when I didn't want it. Now I want it. No, but then I had to just understand. That's when I began, as far as the journey, that's when I began to understand, okay, maybe there are other dynamics that I need to focus on that is contributing to this. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, just a little bit of when the journey started. It was, okay, what else is going on? What else is going on with my mind? What else is going on with my emotions? What is going on specifically for me at the time? What is going on physically? Because that's where I started. First, let's look at what's happening physically, which is when I began to do the research and discovered about the birth control. That was the first part, the birth control and what it actually was doing to my body and how it caused the scarring in the fallopian tubes, and how, like, I just, in my mind, I was like, why is this okay, you know, for a drug to do this, you know? It's like, that's almost permanent birth control, you know? Like, but yeah, so that was when that journey started. It's like, okay, so then I decided I'm not ever going to be on any type of birth control ever again in my life because of this. And then...
Hold on one second, Eden. Could you explain that a little bit better? So let's remind the listeners about what kind of birth control you were offered and what you were told. You weren't told accurate information about it. And then you started to learn that it was actually causing scar tissue in the fallopian tubes. So can you just spell that out a little bit more to remind
you? So in 2007, after I gave birth to my second child, I was offered the birth control of an IUD called the Mirena. And the I was told that the Mirena worked in two ways specifically. One was it released hormones to prevent fertilization of an egg. And then the second way was the Mirena, I was told it's shaped like a T. And so the top of the T would create like a barricade or blockage so that sperm couldn't get through, is how it was described. What I later found out was that the Mirena, the hormones or whatever was released from the Mirena caused chemical burns, basically is how it was. It was chemical burns to my fallopian tubes. And those chemical burns, there were scars as a result. And basically they looked like little craters. So the image I give is if you have ever seen the image of someone walking on the moon, that's what the inside of the fallopian tube looked like, those scars.
And it's not supposed to look like that. The fallopian tubes are supposed to be lined with this flowing little fingers that are like welcoming like this plush carpet for the egg to be tickled and brushed down the tubes and into the into the uterus and all of this. But the chemical burns shriveled up those that lovely plush carpet and created craters instead, which sounds like that's why the egg kind of got stuck in a crater.
That's It was released and got stuck in one of those craters and began to form. And so the first part of that, here, this is where we're getting into, I guess, resources. And also there's also this whole part of demands, like knowing when you're going to when you're having a physical, knowing where you're going and having conversations with the doctor, what are questions that need to be asked, what's information that needs to be understood. When I found out that I was pregnant, it was, I think I was like 4 weeks. I called the doctor immediately because I was so excited. I called to schedule an appointment and I was told that in my city that they did not schedule appointments before 8 weeks. And in my mind, I thought, I'm like, well, we're almost out of the first trimester. You know, I didn't think that sounded healthy. Especially if I'm aware that I'm pregnant, you know, why do I have to wait? Because, you know, what if something's wrong? And it just so happened that I scheduled an appointment. I scheduled it 8 weeks out. And the day that I was rushed to the hospital because my fallopian tubes had ruptured because the baby was forming and I was at the 2 month mark. And of course, that baby was expanding and bursted the fallopian tube, but that happened on December 12, 2012. My appointment was for December 13. That would have made my 8 week mark that following day. And that it was another part that was just, and I remember having the conversation on the phone with the doctor's office, like, you know, if I'm aware that I'm pregnant, you know, why can't I see? And they had availability. And what they told me was, and the receptionist, she was like, well, we get so many people that come in and then they decide that they don't want to, you know, have the baby and they want to have an abortion. And so we don't want to waste, you know, time. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing that. You know, can I be seen? And it was just this, no, it's, you know, 8 weeks. And that was something I didn't like, you know, and if I had just maybe pushed a little bit more, I could have found another doctor. But again, we're back at the resources. In my town, there's one. Or I think at the time there were two, but they were under the same umbrella. Mm-hmm. So there might as well have been operating as one. And again, if I had gone when I was maybe 6 weeks or just gotten just a quick, you know, checkup, basic checkup when I was, when I found out, then they would have been able to identify that the baby was in my fallopian tubes and I might still have a fallopian, two fallopian tubes. But because of that experience, my fallopian tube ruptured one night and I lost 2 pints of blood and I had to go into emergency surgery. My husband had to sign off on it. It was very traumatizing for him because he was basically signing off on the death of his child. And he took it harder than I did. And yeah, that was, so now I'm left with one fallopian tube. Mm.
Wow. So again, having inadequate, underinformed and, you know, ill-motivated medical teams that aren't really taking the whole picture into account, it seems. And yeah. And so, so it sounds like, I if I remember correctly, you talked about learning more about this later, learning more about the effects of this when you started to be exposed to other approaches to healthcare. Can you remind us right. about that a little bit?
Which was about 3 years later. I knew something was wrong when this happened, obviously. I didn't want to seek medical help. I didn't want to go to a doctor or a basic, specifically, I did not want to go to an OB or GYN because of the experience before. I didn't trust them. I didn't feel like any information they gave me would be beneficial to me. And it would only be some way, you know, encouraging me to not have kids and just go ahead. And I don't know. It was just, I didn't want to. And I know people say, you know, people told me, you know, why don't you go get it checked out? But again, my experience wasn't a good one. So I just wanted to stay away from it. And then in 2015, I started a more holistic journey. And that's when, and I moved to a different city. I moved to a larger city that had more resources, that never knew anything about chiropractic or acupuncture before I had moved into that city. And so the holistic approach, it allowed me to start having a regular cycle. It also allowed me to be in, have access to resources and different, I guess, conferences where people were discussing things that I had been through that I had never had heard, you know, be discussed before. And so one of those things was, you know, That was when I learned about the toxins and the feminine products and the washes and the pads and the tampons and the wipes, the cups, like all of that stuff and how they're the carcinogens and things, like all of that.
Can you tell us a little bit more details about that? Now, if listeners on the podcast here may have heard previous episodes where we talked about commercial menstrual pads and tampons actually having substances in them that are deliberately added to make women bleed more. So they have to buy more products. Is that what you're finding out as well?
Yes.
So it's a profit-oriented thing and with no regard to women's health at all. It's just simply to get, make it so women have to buy more products.
Mm-hmm. And if you, you have to be very in tune to, I go to therapy and one thing that my therapist always says is that we have to become more aware and we have to be, we have to become awakened. And so that is, that's what's more important. Like when you listen to, specifically, let's just go with Always. When you listen to an Always commercial, the thing, their selling point is absorbency. They're always talking about, you know, this is 5 times more absorbent. And they are absolutely right. But do we ever have that aha moment that we say, okay, why is this more absorbent? Or, you know, what causes this cotton piece of, you know, something to become more absorbent. But those questions typically never pop up in our heads because we're not aware. We just, okay, this is what's here. It's just cotton, you know, it's just paper. And so it's supposed to be here to soak up all of this blood. And then I have this heavy flow. So this is what I need. But those questions kind of started to arise, like, okay, how is this more absorbent? And so then I'm looking it up and I'm looking at, okay, well, it has these extra products in it that are used to mimic what a natural product is. And so a pad is not just made out of cotton. And then the other thing is the odor. It's my mind is just, but the other selling point is the odor. You know, this decreases the odor. What is it in it that is causing the odor to be decreased? Mm-hmm. What is in your product that is going to take this odor away? You know, so there is a chemical that is added. Typically your chloroforms, there's about 4 different chlorotoxins in your commercial items that are there to get rid of the odor. So that's one thing. The other toxins are there to, it increases the flow. It also increases the time frame. That's going to have you to need more products.
And increasing how many days you bleed and how right. much you bleed.
Typically, there have been a lot of testimonials where people will say, well, my cycle for 10 years was, you know, five days, and now it's 7 days. Some people even 9 days. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, thinking, well, okay, that has to be normal, but it's not.
Yeah. And so naturopathic doctors and chiropractors and holistic health practitioners are starting to talk, and this is where you started to learn about this, are starting to notice that if their patients stop using those commercial products, their long menstrual periods shorten again and they stop bleeding as much. And in fact, that's one of the first things as a womb-centered healing practitioner that I tell people is mm-hmm. to stop using commercial products and only use organic cotton products, ideally reusable cotton pads, because they don't have all those chemicals in them, and it's better for the environment. The amount of waste in the landfills from using these disposable products is horrendous too. Another thing that's harmful about it. So you also talked about other things that you discovered that there were toxins in. You mentioned wipes, you mentioned washes, and you mentioned yes. cups. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Well, a lot of, so the way, usually what attracts the female to things is that the colors, you know, we love looking at pretty pinks and purples and things. Also the second thing is the aroma, the scents. You know, we want to smell fruity and flowery and like all this lavender and things. And so you have to be careful because even though in your mind you're thinking, oh, it's a fragrance. No, it is in fact a toxin. It is a fragrance, but that's your vagina is like a sponge. Okay. And you know this, but the best way that I describe to people is a mouth. It is a mouth. And so whatever you, just like whatever you put at the mouth and your, on your face, the same way your vagina is going to be. If you sit it there, it's going to just soak it up. So if you're cleaning your body and you're cleansing that area, your vagina, with these products, with all of these fragrances in them, it's just soaking that up. and it's just affecting that body. And then a lot of times your cramps, your menstrual cramps are coming from those toxins.
Mm-hmm. And other symptoms too, because
yeah, other symptoms definitely, but even the wipes, like the flushable, even the funny thing, baby wipes are just as harmful. Mm. Right. I tell people, like, you have to look, it's the information is there, and like you have to read. There's like even the like I say, a lot of people, a lot of women I've spoken to who I've, you know, converted over to using an all natural just wipe, they were like, well, I was using baby wipes. And I asked them, I was like, did you look at the ingredients? And in their mind, they're like, well, it's for a baby, it's intended purpose for a baby, so it has to be, you know, safe. But it's not. You have to read. You have to. I learned one thing was, yes, some of these, the important resources were not readily available for me, but I also had to go out and look for some things. And I also had to take the time and read. And so, yes, on one side of the spectrum, the people who I felt, you know, had the charge of making sure I knew this information were dropping the ball, but there was also part of it that I could have done my part. So my part is making sure I at least read. And then we have Google. You know, I tell my kids all the time when they come and ask me something, I'm like, did you look it up? Like when I was a kid, we had an encyclopedia set. That was, I had to do a project, and God forbid it was an old set. You didn't have any new information, but you have Google now. You have all of these resources to look up information. If you don't know what glycerin is, Google it. It'll tell you exactly what it is. If you don't know what styrofoam is, look it up. This is what is in your commercial feminine products, and it's sitting on your vagina. And then that's a whole nother thing, because the bacteria, you're using a pad that's telling you it's 5 times more absorbent. You're going to want to keep it on all day, you know, and you keeping it on all day, that bacteria from your menstrual flow is just sitting there mixed with the toxins. And then your vagina is just soaking it, just eating it all up. And it's just infecting your vagina, ultimately your womb, ultimately your whole body, because it's womb centered, right?
Wow. That's the center of your body.
Exactly. And your mind is just, it's just trickling, you know? So that's the biggest thing. It's like, and it's kind of these aha moments when I have conversations with people and I'm telling them about what hygiene is, and I'm telling them, you know, it's, when I first started, people just thought it was, oh, she's selling, you know, pads. And I'm like, well, no, these are different. And yes, I could clearly create my own product. And there's, you know, there's room for that. But there are so many products that are already out there that already exist that are doing a wonderful job at, you know, providing something that's safe for our bodies, a pad or a tampon that is completely cotton, or a reusable, like you stated, they're reusable underwear now. And that's a whole nother thing. Like, are your underwear cotton? Are they silk? You know?
Well, I just want to mention with the reusable, like the period panties, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I trust those period panties, because what is in them that allows them to just be a panty and absorb all the blood? What's in there?
Right. And there, that's a good point. And I will say there are not any period panties available on Hygiene as of yet. Mm-hmm. There have been, I've had about 4 different companies reach out to me about their product, and I'm currently researching.
Okay. That's good to know, because I've been suspicious about these period panties, because it doesn't make sense to me that it would be able to just hold and absorb in a thin panty mm-hmm. what it takes a bigger, fatter pad to absorb, that's a natural fabric, right? So what do they have in there? They probably have some gel or something. And exactly. Is that a toxin? And we just don't know about it yet because there hasn't been any research done on it. And everybody's all excited about period panties, but
because they're convenient. Convenient sells too,
mm-hmm.
You know, which is why people don't typically also what we're about to in the next few weeks definitely offer are the cotton reusable pads,
mm-hmm.
Not the panties just yet, but that people typically don't want those because they're not convenient. Oh, I have to put this on and I have to wash it. Yeah, but it's safe. And and with the period panties, yes, some of them do have gel. Right now, I know one of them that reached out, they have the gel. And of course, they're going to tell you, oh, it's not harmful, but
the companies who make baby wipes say it's not harmful too, and
right,
okay to wipe it on your baby, and so it must be okay to wipe it on your vagina, and it's not. It's got chemicals in there that are absorbing not only into your vagina but your baby,
right?
You know, okay. Let's. So, do you have wipe products, baby? Adult women that don't have harmful chemicals on your site?
Yes. Currently we have Ill Organic brand is one that we have. And then we have Good Wipes brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, the Ill Organic brand, I am going to discontinue it very soon, only because they're a couple, the end of 2020, they branched off and I think they have like another contributor to their product making. And if I'm not mistaken, that's part of the Always community. And I'm not feeling it. Good Wipes is an Atlanta based company that's fairly new. And I live in Atlanta and I have a relationship with them, and it's actually a male that created the brand, but it was just supposed to be an all natural wipe. It started just being body wipes for people that went to the gym. And then that from there, it was a lot of women saying, hey, what about, you know, wipes for that are safe for my vagina? And so Good Wipes has been my go-to. And I've started formulating my subscription packages with only providing Good Wipes brand.
Wow. And so it sounds like you're really curating these subscriptions that people can get on. And you're really doing that background research so that people can say, and maybe even if they don't know about a product, or they can reach out to you and say, hey, what about this product? I don't see it on your site. And you can say, well, I researched that one. It's not on my site for a reason. Or, oh, that's a new one for me. I'll research it and maybe I'll add it to my. And so that's the service really that you're providing. Yes, you're providing these products, but you're providing this service of researching it to make sure that these products are really going to be healthy for people. That's so beautiful. I just want to thank you for mm-hmm. Making all of the challenges that you've experienced into something so beneficial for your community. Can you tell, you know, you mentioned cups, and I'm curious because I thought that menstrual cups, that there's nothing really toxic about them because most of them are like food grade silicone or something like that. Am I incorrect about that?
You're not incorrect, but you have to be cautious. I've learned that about 80% of them are the food grade silicone. There are some that are silicone based, but they have some additional toxins in them for durability.
Mm.
So, and I currently do not offer a cup option only because it's tricky. Mm-hmm. Also, there's two reasons as far as me offering options. I currently have two brands of tampons, but here's the thing. I'm trying my best because I have different clients or customers. One, they're going to get it because, okay, this is safe. But I'm having to also make sure that they have the education to know why it's safe. People that go with tampons and cups are usually on a convenience end of the spectrum. If you do not know how to properly use either, the bacteria can cause damage. And so with the cup, if you're getting this cup and you're saying, I can keep this cup inserted into my vagina for an entire day, when I get up and take a bath in the morning to when I come home from after work and after I've gone to the gym, then that's not how you should use it. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, I don't want to offer it without making sure that they know how to use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, this is one of the things that I talk to my womb wellness people that come to me for, wanting to learn more about womb wellness, is that even your healthiest, and even with the healthiest approach to using internal methods of capturing your blood, like tampons and cups, mm-hmm. those can often be the underlying cause, or one of the underlying causes, for menstrual symptoms, because basically what you're telling your womb is that it's not okay to bleed. And so I run the analogy with folks. I say, what if you plugged up your colon or your urethra so that you only had to pee or have a bowel movement when it was more convenient for you? How healthy do you think you would be after a period of time doing that, right? And that's ultimately what we're doing. Our womb is designed to bleed mm-hmm. once a month, just like we're designed to have a bowel movement couple times a day. We're designed to urinate at different times throughout the day, and we can right. feel when that time is there, and we do what we need to do to make arrangements so that those things can happen. But with menstruation, we're plugging it up and giving the body the message that it's not okay for this to be happening.
Right.
And that creates a state of stagnation. And even if you aren't doing it in such a way that harmful bacteria start to grow, just having that message, that state of stagnation, can be problematic and can make for increased menstrual cramps, increased bleeding, because the body's like trying to bleed and release all this blood yes. and you're plugging it up. So then it tries to bleed more to flush it out, right? That's one way. Or it can like stop the bleeding because it gets the message it's not okay to bleed. So I'm just going to stop bleeding altogether. And it can be very disruptive. And so oftentimes, one of the first steps I say to my people is, okay, let's have you try not using any internal methods of capturing the blood for a period of time and see if that alleviates. Just that alone can alleviate some of the symptoms, just like getting off of the commercial chemically laden products can often alleviate some of these
right.
painful and difficult menstrual symptoms. So can stopping using internal methods. So I just wanted to mention that here, because even though they might be safe in one sense, mm-hmm. they could be contributing to symptoms. Even the healthiest tampons, even the healthiest cups, even the using them in the healthiest possible way. I just wanted to mention that too. And that's all information that it takes a sit down moment.
Thank you.
What's that?
No, I said, and I thank you for that.
Yeah. And it takes and that's why I wanted to invite you on a podcast too, because hopefully you'll be able to put this podcast recording on your site or something and so that it can help to, educate people who are looking into your products about what it's about and how we can take better care of ourselves with the products that you're offering. But not only that, by just simply taking better care of ourselves, understanding our menstrual cycle better, and perhaps having a different idea about it, you know, because the whole thing with the convenience thing too, I want to say a couple of words about that. The thing is, we're designed, our cyclical nature is a map for how creativity happens. It's a map for how life is renewed. And it's the same map you see in nature with the cycles of the seasons, with the cycles of the moon. And if you notice in nature, in the cycle of the seasons, there's a rest period built in to the system where everything goes dormant, everything dies back, right? In the wintertime, everything dies back. And then there's a season of renewal after that. And that cyclical nature gives momentum and forward movement to creative energy, to life renewing itself again and again and again. That same cycle is happening in our body. And when we decide that we believe in this whole societal structure that says you have to be working at the same intensity level, you have to be productive and as productive and just as active every single day of every month in a linear fashion, that's designed on a male body who has a daily cycle of renewal and rest, renewal and rest. And we have that cycle too, but we also have a monthly cycle of renewal and rest, as well as a yearly cycle of renewal and rest. Everyone has that yearly cycle. Okay. And convenience is another way of saying ignoring and stopping that monthly cycle, ignoring the very cyclical nature of our being and overriding that and denying ourselves the benefit of that momentum, that creative momentum and replenishment that is so important. And this is why so many people, especially women, are ending up with adrenal fatigue and energy deficiency and burnout, right? Because we're not encouraged and supported to rest during our periods. And if you are resting during your period, you don't need any of the convenience. You can just take care of it. You know, you take a shower, you take a bath, or you know, it doesn't matter if you make a mess. You sit on a red towel on your couch all day.
Right.
It doesn't matter if there's a leak or whatever, you know. In fact, you can
let it flow.
You can let it flow. And some people even do free bleeding, which is taking it to the next level of just letting the body bleed, and you bleed on a towel or a mat, and it's a very healing and sacred practice to honor and respect and appreciate and celebrate this important part of our cycle. And this is part of what I teach in the Womb-Centered Healing Temple. And there's many people that are teaching about this too. I'm not the only one. And so I just wanted to mention some of those things about the culture of convenience around the menstrual cycle. Because why is that? Again, you're saying we need to ask more questions. Why do we want it to be convenient? Convenient for what? For what purpose? For whose purposes? And is that convenience really beneficial to us? Or is there it's actually harming us? Because it's convenient. We can keep going until we burn out.
Right.
And we have nothing left. And because we're ignoring that natural built-in cycle of renewal and rest and replenishment that our body is trying to implement, and yet we're not listening. So I could go on and on about that, but I just definitely wanted to get that in there about the culture of convenience.
It's very helpful and it's very necessary. Mm-hmm. So Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, so are there, it sounds like we covered pretty much all the products that you have in your site. And it sounds like you're wanting to do more educational things too on your site. And perhaps this podcast can be part of that. Yes. Do you have any other educational materials available there on the site that go with your products?
Yes. Just information. So how we talked about the toxins. Mm-hmm. So I do have a blog that is on the site. Mm-hmm. The blog, there are a couple of blogs. One talks about the toxins in the products that we use. Another blog talks about pH and the importance of pH balance and everything down to the water that you're using to clean with, you know, affecting that pH. But yeah, the educational materials are currently just the blogs. Mm-hmm.
And do you regularly write more blogs?
I try to do a blog once a month, or in past, that's what I have done, but it's increasing as we go. I don't like writing. I like talking.
Yeah, well, see, there we go. Maybe you'll create your own podcast. You can do. Check out anchor.fm. Anchor.fm makes it real easy to make your own podcast.
Okay.
Go on there. You'll hear on the Anchor podcast, I do a little blurb about how much I love this platform for making.
Okay.
So,
okay. Well, I'll check it out. Definitely.
Yeah. Cause if you love talking and you have all this information you want to share, and then you can invite guests like myself and other experts, you can invite your chiropractor, your naturopath, all these people that you've been learning from, you can invite them on as guests, like what I do. And then they share more and more information to your audience about it. So.
I like that. I'm going to look into it. Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you so much. So tell us the name of your website again, so folks can get on there and check it out.
So it is hygienie.com, and hygienie, it's hygienie.
Okay. Like genie in the lamp. Right?
Yes. Okay. It was a play on hygiene and a genie.
Yes, got it.
So it's hygienie.com, and we're growing and we're changing, really improving some things, and I'm very excited about it. But right now you can go and you can find your basic necessities for when you're experiencing your cycle. And then we have a couple of cleansing options, such as your washes and your whites. We also have some all natural lubricants too.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, because that's another place where those toxins sneak in on you.
And yes. But
one of my mentors says, don't put anything in or on your vagina that you wouldn't put in your mouth.
Because it's a mouth.
It's a mouth. So somebody said that. It is. I know, that's our lower mouth. We have our upper mouth and our lower mouth, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, so wonderful to be with you here today, Eden. And I look forward to talking with you again soon. Listeners, know that you can learn more about what's going on at the Womb Centered Healing Temple by visiting wombcenteredhealing.com. You can sign up for the newsletter there. I want to encourage you if you're listening to this on Anchor, you can subscribe, you can support the podcast by setting up a monthly contribution of any amount, can be a dollar, and that can really support us or more. I'd also encourage you to subscribe and like, hit the subscribe button and like button if you're watching this on YouTube. All right. Thanks so much. That's all for now. Until next time, take good care.